My presentation is a continuation of what I presented last summer at the conference in Tennessee. So if you want more information on transhumanism itself, I would refer you back to last year's archives to deal with transhumanism itself. It's interesting that our discussion in the last session touched on the idea of artificial intelligence, artificial minds, and that's all part of transhumanism. But I'm going even beyond that to the emergence of religious notions, even the emergence of a transhumanist God as in part of this. So in brief form, I'm going to just touch very briefly on what transhumanism is, and then talk mostly about transhumanism as an emergent religion, and then talk about how Christianity is kind of reacting to that emergence. So first of all, what is transhumanism? It's basically, right now, it's a philosophy and cultural movement because transhumanism is not with us yet. They're looking forward later this century to a convergence of technologies that I'll deal with in a moment that would bring about a rapid change in the human condition. It's going beyond therapeutics to enhance human intellectual capabilities, reach longer lives and all sorts of things. To its opponents, it is the world's most dangerous idea. That's the summary from Fukuyama. We're familiar with a lot of these things as individual technologies of biotechnology, nanotechnology, computer science, cognitive sciences that are developing, and robotics. And all of this could lead to a situation where there are life forms that are biological and mechanical. So in this lower right picture, it's not clear which of these beings is human. Perhaps both are not in the transhumanist vision of the future. There are a lot of enhancements that come with this. There are chemical supplements that could very specifically modify behaviors and monitor ideation and report back, for instance, from a surveillance point of view. Nanomachines to do repairs, all the way up to transfers of human minds into computer systems, so you would no longer have a biological instantiation of a human life, but it would be living in a computer system somehow or the other. Time frames for this go out to about 2045 is the projections of the transhumanists. Whether it happens or not, there are a lot of uncertainties to it. There are reasons to believe these projections, and there are strong reasons to not believe them. But the point of my research is that transhumanist thought is already affecting society, and we need to start thinking through some of these things. So I'm going to start building this bridge between science and transhumanism as a religion. Max Moore is probably the leading philosopher of the movement. He's an atheist. He and his wife published recently, about a year ago, The Transhumanist Reader, which is a collection of essays and papers going back some years. Really a great one-stop shop for information on the movement if you are interested. And Max Moore points out that transhumanism, like humanism, can act as a philosophy of life that fulfills some of the functions of religion. So he recognizes that this movement has religious connotations. When you start talking about immortality, which is a basic subject of religion, you unavoidably move toward religious thought. He points out further that there are transhumanists who hold religious views. Max Moore does not, but it's kind of a big tent organization right now where people that with theistic beliefs and atheistic beliefs kind of collaborate on defining what transhumanism is and where it is going. He notes that Christian transhumanists are very rare. There is a Facebook page, Christian Transhumanism, where alleged or self-identifying Christians participate in discussions. A lot of them are Mormons because their theology is very consistent with the idea of becoming a god and material spirituality. They're already looking at how transhumanism and religious thought coexist, whether they're compatible or not, from Max Moore's perspective as an atheist. Now, if you move from Max Moore to Ray Kurzweil is kind of the public face of transhumanism in a lot of ways. His book about the singularity, The Singularity is Near, was a bestseller. He appears a lot of places, does a lot of public speaking. He's a Unitarian, and he's also recently been made a director of engineering at Google. There's a YouTube video out there of Ray Kurzweil talking about reanimating his father, for instance. He's collected a lot of information on his father, documents and things, and he's hoping to kind of recreate his father in a computer form, kind of a computer resurrection, if you will. So in the Singularity is Near, he has this conversation with Bill Gates where he talks about the religious aspects of this, and he says, well, we need a new religion. That he looks back at traditional religions as a way of rationalizing death as a good thing, and transhumanism, where we're going to break that barrier and live forever. There needs to be a new kind of religion. Kurzweil looks forward to that. But he doesn't go so far as to establish it. Well, others have. We'll get to that in a moment. That he looks forward to an expansion of human intelligence after the singularity that will take over the universe. The universe will wake up, be conscious, and be sublimely intelligent. So there's kind of a collective intelligence aspect to this religion. And this is the kind of God that they end up describing, one that has a lot of the characteristics of the God of the Bible: omniscience, omnipresence, omnibenevolent, but it's a kind of a socially defined goodness. It's kind of multi-personal. In the Bible, we have the Trinity that has created life and has fellowship with the angels and with human beings, but they aren't necessarily part of God. The transhumanist God has this kind of aspect, but it's incorporating all sentient life, whether it's human or computer-generated or what have you. And of course, they believe that that this will be eternal, even to the point of surviving what's referred to as the Big Crunch. There are people involved in this that envision that they will break, somehow modify the laws of physics even, to survive whatever cosmic calamities may be in the future. But of course, he's not a pre-existent God. It's something that exists out in the future. So Max Moore recognizes there are religious influences in this. Kurzweil looks forward to a new religion to pick up the transhumanism idea. Well, there's already a transhumanist religion established not too long ago called TerraSem. It's described as a trans religion. It's sort of like Scientology on steroids in a way. The idea of a trans religion is that, according to their statements, it's compatible with other religions. You don't have to give up your Christianity or your Buddhism or Hinduism to participate in this. Whether that's true or not, of course, is much debatable. But what they really have done is gotten a lot of people together under this banner of TerraSem as a project. So it's a religion that's intending to create God, ultimately. And then they come out and basically say that. They describe the characteristics of this God and says, we are building TerraSem into God. Now, I don't know what a smart atom and a conscious electron is, but they are sure that they're out there somewhere and that these are going to be elements of this God that they are going to create. And of course, as a Christian, we have a term for this called idolatry. But of course, they don't use that in their descriptions. A little more about the TerraSem religion. This is Martine Rothblatt. She's formerly Martin Rothblatt. Transgenderism, for her, is kind of a front end of this, that individuals have the power and the responsibility to create themselves in whatever fashion they seem see as best. So she's done that in terms of a gender transformation. You probably don't know about Martine Rothblatt, but you've probably heard of Sirius Satellite Radio. She's the person behind that. So she's a very wealthy person. She's been involved in business and technical matters. And so naturally they use a lot of internet and radio to propagate their beliefs. It's kind of a hybrid of religion and a scientific society, because they do have conferences. They do a lot of things. Is it Second Life, where you can participate in events across the internet? They have rituals of meditation, and this is something that's out there that basically says, you know, addresses this God in the making. So sounds rather New Age-ish to me. They have a couple online journals, Journal of Personal Cyber Consciousness. And a lot of people are participating in those forums to exchange ideas. And they're doing some experimentation on this. They're doing things to try to capture quote-unquote mind files by various means, so that they can transfer these characteristics of a person's beliefs and emotions and thought patterns into a computer system, and to see how close they can come to reproducing that consciousness in a computer. So this is the most outstanding of the transhumanist religions. There are others. There are people out there that don't seem to participate in the TerraSAM movement, but certainly have religious thoughts, and they try to collect like-minded people across the internet to develop this thought. So going on from here to the Christian side of this, last year I talked some about the limits of creativity. That was the theme last year. I'm not going to deal with that today, but in the reading I've done in the last year, I've been struck by the ways in which Christian thought has been adapted or hijacked, if you will, to support some of the transhumanist movement. There are Christians who argue strongly that transhumanism is something that Christians should be participating in, and others from completely the opposite point of view. Two books that I'll oppose to one another here. The first by Jens Zimmermann, who teaches out at Trinity Western, and Jacques Ellul. Jacques Ellul is a major figure in the field that I'm into, science and technology studies. So for anchoring my PhD dissertation, I like to have Ellul in the picture. It's a pragmatic thing there. Zimmermann is a Canadian research chair in interpretation, religion, and culture. So he's, I suppose, received grant money from the Canadian government to look at religious matters, and his interest is what he calls incarnational humanism. He's looking for a basis on which Christians and the culture can get along. I think most people would think that humanism was a good thing if you take out the secular piece of it. Certainly the secular humanists think that it's a good idea. And Zimmermann's thesis is that through the incarnation, the idea of humanism kind of took hold, kind of elevated the view of mankind, and that secular society is kind of living off of that heritage. It's very interesting. In the first three chapters of his book, he goes back to trace the idea of humanism going back to the church fathers. And this idea of deification is very prominent in some of that. And so there's a quote here: "This idea may sound strange to our modern ears, but early theologians, both Eastern and Western, were enamored with the notion that God's descent into human nature allows the human ascent to the divine." Now the question is, well, how far do you go on that? I certainly aspire to be more and more like Christ, but this appears to be a Christian patristic view that could easily be misinterpreted and taken to mean that we are going to be evolving toward gods. That's certainly not Zimmermann's view. He's aware of transhumanism. He's not writing this book about it. But I need to pull this thread a little more, that there are certainly Christian ideas that could easily be hijacked to build a basis for the transhumanist agenda. And of course, the Christians that are involved in the movement see this as a purpose in Christianity, kind of a post-millennial destination for all mankind that will be achieved through God's revelation in nature. Opposed to that view is Jacques Ellul. Jacques Ellul is a Reformed Christian. He was part of the French underground in World War II, and he saw the horrors of that era and the abuses of technology and propaganda and whatnot. And he's known as a technological determinist, someone who kind of sees scientific and technological progress as unstoppable, dehumanizing effect upon the world. His book, The Presence of the Kingdom, precedes a lot of his other writing. It's probably the most theological of his books. So The Presence of the Kingdom is really presenting this as more of a theological determinism, which is consistent with his Reformed views. That in Ellul's view, the will of the world is always a will to death, a will to suicide. So the reprobate, the element of sin in the world is progressively taking mankind in the wrong direction. We Christians must not accept the suicide, and we must act that it cannot take place. So he would be very, very much an opponent, I believe, of transhumanism. And in his view, I'm sure that transhumanism would be seen as nothing less than a final step in the destruction of God's order of creation, that there's a created order, there's a way that God would intend things to be, and that when you talk about transferring a mind from a human body into a computer system, you're really talking about suicide. This issue of consciousness comes up. Is consciousness something that can be separated from the body? I don't think that is the way God created human beings, and the whole notion of proving that you can make that transfer is something that I don't think anyone can say with certainty that you could prove that that an artificial intelligence was conscious or not. So I think that the transhumanist agenda, to me, is very consistent with Ellul's view of the world being bent on suicide. Now, you take those two extremes and you pays your money and takes your pick. I think that it's clear that the transhumanism is more than just scientism. It has a very strong religious component to it. It's dealing with things that have always been subjects of religion, and there are elements of that are overtly religious, Teresim being the most striking form of that, where they want to essentially have religious rituals and beliefs that rally people around this idea of moving toward a technological heaven and leaving the rest of us behind. You look at the ways in which the Bible can be interpreted, there are alternative ways in which all things can hold together in Christ. You know, the idea of incarnational humanism that Zimmerman is presenting is that perhaps by reinvigorating the biblical view of humanism, we can start working, live in peace with the culture around us. So that would be a way of holding secular and Christian society together and not killing one another. Of course, the transhumanists are going beyond that, like the Christian transhumanists, to say that through these things we're going to hold things together going off into the future, and we're going to restore creation to the way God intended it to be. And all of this basically is just like everything else. You know, sooner or later, Christians are going to have to decide how to deal with this. There are ways in which transhumanist ideas will inevitably make their way into society and the church. One of the interesting things in some of the reading is that we deal with automated customer service systems now on a routine basis. And I think most of us probably hate the things. It's easy to tell you're talking to a disembodied voice, but eventually it may be harder and harder to do that. And then what happens? What responsibilities will we have toward these artificial intelligences that we will deal with? And some of the ways in which they're doing it are rather interesting. If you could take a mind file of somebody and produce a simulation of someone, so like Ray Kurzweil's father. Well, perhaps you could do the same with John Calvin or someone else. You produce a simulation of that person And then you start having all kinds of issues with how you relate to that simulated person. So, final quote is just from Psalm 82. This is much quoted by the people believing in deification, that this relationship of you are gods, but it ends with death. You know, when you take that verse in its context, it's not pointing toward our being godlike in a positive way, but in a very risky way, that the ends of these things could be death. So subject to your questions, which I hope I can understand, I will end it here. So.
Thank you. So we have plenty of time for questions. Thanks for ending with lots of time for that. So Terry.
So, most of us here are most of my age. As I reflect on this stuff here, if I just hang on for another 20, 30 years, all these problems that are going to cause my demise will go away.
That's right.
And so I just need to keep safe and not get hit by a truck or a bus.
That's right. Look out for meteors. I don't remember how old Ray Kurzweil is. He's a little older than me, so I think he's in his early 60s. And he is convinced that he will not die. He takes enormous amounts of vitamins and dietary supplements. I think he's diabetic. He doesn't have any terminal illnesses. So he is convinced that if he makes it, survives long enough, that medical science will keep him alive, and eventually when this singularity comes around in 2045, artificial intelligence will exceed human intelligence, that artificial intelligence will set about its own improvement in a very rapid way, and pretty soon we'll be able to whip all those problems.
Just one more comment. If you ever call the Apple service people, first thing, the machine tries to convince you that it can understand complete sentences. And
all right.
Just go ahead and ask the question, and I'll get you the help you need. But it's very interesting that dynamic that they start appealing to your resistance
right.
to these kinds of service.
On the other hand, when I deal with some people, I question whether they're conscious.
I'll just let you feel the questions. How's that?
Okay.
I think there's a very basic philosophical problem with consciousness being transferred into a machine or computer system. But you turn the question the other way, and I missed your session call before this, the idea of consciousness emerging from a biological machine in a sense, which may be true, I don't know, I didn't hear your session, but I think there's a pretty good case for if you start with your rational causes without reason and things happen randomly, and the truth and reality that we see and perceive, is that just the result of random processes or electrons or something that was programmed to respond to sensory data or something? There's no way to know philosophically if this is all just in my head or if there's an objective reality. So you have that problem with consciousness and us looking outward, but now that it's the same problem the other way around. If there's a computer that supposedly has been programmed, that how do you know he's actually conscious? You can theoretically make a computer act and respond and behave exactly like a human being, identically. They'll fool everyone in customer service and everything. You still don't know if there's anything behind that, or if it's just a machine. And in fact, there's a philosophical problem here. I mean, how do I know that you're not just a computer?
The other mind's problem.
I'm not conscious. I don't know how you feel inside your head. You might just be a machine and responding to me.
That's right. I sent my robot to give this presentation.
I find it hard to
Right.
I don't think we're very close yet to being able to transfer real awareness.
Well, that's not stopping these people. You say we have a philosophical problem. From Martin Rothblatt's position, we have a legal problem because the state will not recognize such intelligences. They are already working on the legal arguments for giving legal status to computer intelligences. You think we got a problem with people coming across the southern border?
Well, legally, there's another legal problem. They do recognize some people that might not be more than computers.
Right. Or the voting rights. I think you got a question here. Right. Dominic?
You mentioned that they're predicting they'll be able to anticipate and figure out how to avoid the big crunch, but really it's the heat death of the universe, right? If you become immortal, you have to figure out how to handle the big freeze. So how do they expect how they're going to...
I don't know. Frank Tipler is the physicist who's famous for that sort of thing, and I haven't finished his tome yet.
People are notorious for being about 10
But if you can modify the laws of physics, and they think they will, then that's not really a problem. So
perhaps one more question, and then after the break, there's plenty of time in our panel discussion also for further conversations.
It seems to me the transhumanist thing presupposes a physicalist kind of view of reality and ecology. Mm-hmm. The other thing, like, just a question about Jacques Ellul, that you mentioned, it seems to me that he doesn't even think go to that extent that as long as we're humans running our lives strictly by efficiency in all areas, that we've already become machines, even though we haven't downloaded our brains, we're basically living like machines, and everything's subjected to efficiency.
Right. That's right. His thesis is that this inevitable push towards efficiency, which people accept and embrace in the way they live their lives, has a dehumanizing effect. Right. And so the presence of the kingdom, I found to be very good. I wasn't even aware of that until very recently. To go back to his initial theological description of the problem was very enlightening. So
it's hard to read it, though, because some people say he's a determinist, and other people say, you don't understand Jacques Ellul. And then I've heard other people say, to understand him, you have to read the entire corpus of his works, which is kind of hard to do because... Mm-hmm. He wrote a book every year for a couple of decades. was he really a determinist, or was he just a dialectic kind of writer? Or
He's very much a dialectic writer, but the fact that he's reformed, I think, colors a lot of things. His things too. He views a lot of these things in terms of God's plan unfolding and our participation in that. The whole word participation has a lot of a loaded thing. But he views the responsibilities of Christians in each age to figure out what, for that age, is the appropriate response to the suicidal tendencies of society. It's very situational.
All right. Thank you very much, once again, David. Thank you.